West England may have a few showers, but in the afternoon it'll be better. The rest of England, downpours on the way from morning onwards. The London area, East Anglia, the North East, thundery downpours at that and more local flooding. And that heavy rain tomorrow across eastern areas may last through Saturday night and into the early hours of Sunday morning. Also, a lot cooler in London, for example, 20 degrees down from what was around 28 Celsius today. So that's it. Quite a turbulent night on the way.
Thanks very much, Tom. Now on BBC Radio 4, Nigel Anthony concludes his reading of Operation Massacre. It's summer 1956. The botched execution of a group of men in a suburb of Buenos Aires has left five men dead, but more have escaped. One of them, although badly wounded, has been taken to a clinic where the local police have found him and are keeping him under guard.
There's no doubt that the local police want to get rid of Livaraga. He's a witness. But first they need to solve the problem of the other survivors. If they can catch them, they'll execute them again. But if even one escapes, there'll be no point. They transfer Livaraga secretly to Moreno's first precinct, where he's thrown into a cell, naked, without food or medical assistance. But his relatives don't give up. A telegram is sent to the president. In my capacity as father, Juan Carlos Livaraga, executed the 10th at dawn on Route 8, but who survived, being tended to thereafter San Martin Polyclinic from where he was moved, Sunday around 9 o'clock. Not knowing new whereabouts, I anxiously request your humane intervention to prevent being executed again. Assuring you there had been confusion, as he is unconnected to any movement. The reply arrives quickly. I report your son was wounded during shooting, escaped thereafter, was arrested, and is staying at Moreno Precinct. Livaraga's family hurries to the precinct, where the police pull the old trick. Juan Carlos has never been there, say the same clerks, who just saw him thrown into a cell. Everyone else in the neighbourhood assumes he's dead. But remarkably, Livaraga survives his infected wounds, the hunger, the damp Moreno dungeon. Later, in the political prisoners' block, he comes across Yunta, who, after escaping the scene of the execution, returned home, but on hearing he was being hunted, inexplicably turned himself in. He has been taunted by his guards to the brink of insanity. From other prisoners, the two men keep hearing the name of a La Plata lawyer, Maxim von Koch. They ask to speak to him. Von Koch listens with awe to the story of what happened on the night of June the 9th. He agrees to defend them. On the night of August the 16th, the prisoners are getting ready for bed when they hear an order, "Quiet, people! If I call your name, come out with all your things." Miguel Angel Junta, Juan Carlos Livaraga. They look at each other in disbelief. Embrace. Then the same thought occurs to both simultaneously. Maybe it's a ruse to kill them. But there, leaning against a pillar outside the prisoner's block, von Koch is waiting for them, smiling. Junta says he'll never forget that moment. The lawyer takes them straight to police headquarters to get their release papers approved. On Junta's form, under grounds of arrest, there's an expressive line of typed dashes. There were, in fact, no grounds for why they'd tried to execute him. And now, there are no grounds for why, by virtue of a simple decree, he's being returned to the world. Junta and Livaraga owe their lives not only to the efforts of von Koch, but to a happy circumstance. The operation to catch the other fugitives has failed. The chief of police, Fernando Suarez's problem is easy to explain. He's arrested a dozen men before martial law was instated. He executed them without trial. And now it turns out that seven of these men are alive. On June the 12th, the papers publish a list of five men executed in the region of San Martin. The report doesn't say who arrested them, who ordered them to be killed, or why. It doesn't so much as allude to the escape of the other seven. But Suarez feels compelled to talk. He brings in the press. During the emergency, I travelled to the town of Moreno, where the accidental explosion of a bomb led us to discover a house belonging to an engineer who was affiliated with the Peronist Party. We confiscated 31 high-powered time bombs. I was in the middle of this operation when I was informed that a secret meeting that included General Tanco had taken place in a house in Vicente López. The operation led to the arrest of 14 individuals, but the aforementioned member of the military was not apprehended. At 11 p.m., when I was in that house, I found out about the revolt at the mechanics school. Suarez said nothing about the final destination of the 14 individuals. Who was going to connect the dots between five men executed in the region of San Martin and the arrests in Vicente López? Yet the chief of police had given himself away, because the crucial thing that he says here, before anyone ever accused him of anything, is that he arrested these individuals at 11 p.m., an hour and a half before martial law was instated. For nearly 4 months, no one asks him for an explanation. But when the bomb explodes, it's in his very office. At the start of October, Naval Information Services inform him that one of his own men has denounced him. Jorge Doglia, head of the Police Judicial Division, is a lawyer committed to civil rights. Soon after he assumes his post, the prisoners giving him their statements complain of torture. They bear traces of their punishment. He brings the problem to Suarez, who first pretends to be shocked, before mocking him openly, then threatening him. Doglia goes to the second in command, to no avail, so he presents his indictment before the governance ministry of the province. His indictment has two parts to it. The first refers to the torture, the second to the botched illegal execution of Livaraga. On this point, Doglia can only know what Livaraga tells him, which is that they wanted to execute him and a bunch of other people, the majority of whom he didn't know by name, and that he and Yunta escaped. Suarez strikes back by accusing Doglia of having gone to an organization outside the department to report acts committed in the heart of the police department. He fabricates an allegation against Doglia, who's removed from his post for ethical reasons, but not before the lawyer has spoken to the socialist representative to the province advisory board, Eduardo Schaposnik. At the beginning of December, the charges are made again, this time from Schaposnik's lips. Then, on December the 14th, Livaraga himself appears in court to sue whoever was responsible for attempted homicide and damages. On December the 18th, Suarez appears in front of the advisory board to rebut Schaposnik. Up until this moment, as Suarez claims, there is no proof of the secret execution. But now, it is the chief of police himself who inadvertently provides it. The stenographic transcription of his statement reads, "With respect to this Mr. Livaraga, I would like to make known that on the night of June the 9th, I received the order to raid a house in person where General Tanco was meeting with the leaders of the group that were going to attack the mechanics school. At 11 p.m, I raided that property in person. I was half an hour late. If I had done it a bit earlier, I would have arrested General Tanco. I found 14 people on that property who didn't have time to resist. They were armed with Colt pistols. Among them was that man. When I found out about what was happening in La Plata, I went to headquarters and placed these men in the commissioner's custody. At dawn, the executive power ordered the execution of these people who were about to participate in these acts or who had adopted some kind of revolutionary attitude." So the chief of police has admitted that those 14 men existed, and among them was Livaraga. He's reaffirmed that he arrested them at 11 p.m., when the papers of June the 10th unanimously report that martial law was announced at 12:30. Suarez claims the men were about to participate. That is to say, had not participated in any acts. It's also worth noting that the chief of police has not yet found, nor will he find, witnesses who saw ex-General Tanco inside the house. Nor will he be able to show that the men were armed. In spite of all this, the men were to be executed at dawn, by order of the executive power. The events that I recount were systematically denied or distorted by the government of the liberating revolution. Still, there was something missing from my evidence, and that was the document based on Livaraga's formal accusation, prepared by Judge Belisario Huello in Plata. It's a detailed account of the victim's arrest, transfer to the San Martin District Police Department, failed execution, brief stay at the clinic, and imprisonment in Moreno. As a journalist, my personal experience with judges has not been encouraging, but the way Judge Huello carries out his investigation is exemplary. He issues a subpoena to the head of the presidential military house. He sends a letter to the chief of police asking for information. He asks for information from the San Martin District Police Department. The head of the presidential military is a busy man and never responds. The chief of police only responds a month later. The San Martin District Police Department replies immediately, only to say, on the requested date, I report no record exists on the detention of Juan Carlos Livaraga. But as the judge summonses one after another of the men involved in the arrest and detention of the victims, the police case begins to crumble. Finally, on January the 17th, a sullen and defeated man comes to give his statement. Chief Inspector Moreno, head of the San Martin District Police Department, on the night in question. His testimony practically brings the case to a close. He admits that he did indeed personally receive the strict order by radio, dispatched by the chief of police himself, to proceed immediately with the execution of all the individuals who'd been arrested at the house in San Vicente. He adds finally that the task with which he'd been charged was horribly unpleasant and went far beyond the stipulated duties of the police. But since he understood that in an emergency the police stopped taking their orders from headquarters and take them directly from the army, he was entirely certain that were he to disobey such an order, he himself would have been the one executed. Fearing his incarceration is imminent, Suarez goes looking for help. Judge Huello receives a letter from a military judge, Colonel Gonzalez, asking if he's hearing a case based on a complaint lodged by Livaraga. If affirmative, since the event in question falls within military jurisdiction, I ask that Your Honour desist from continuing to hear the referenced case and submit the matter at hand to this military court of justice. The case was transferred to a so-called military justice system that was equally complicit and partisan. So the crime of the José León Suárez massacre went forever unpunished. This, then, is the irremovable stain that soils a government, a justice system, and an army equally. That the men arrested in Florida were condemned to death without trial and without justification. And no amount of finagling will erase the horrific evidence showing that a martial law that was instated on June the 10th was retroactively applied to men who were arrested on June the 9th. And that is not execution. It's murder.
Nigel Anthony has been reading Operation Massacre by Rodolfo Walsh. It was abridged and produced for BBC Radio 4 by Jane Marshall Productions. And our next book of the week, beginning on Monday, is Alan Shipton's biography of the singer-songwriter Harry Nilsson. Now, to the sea. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday the 24th of August. There are warnings of gales in Trafalgar and Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800, low just south of Iceland, 985, expected 75 miles north of Iceland, 993 by 1800 Saturday. Low, northern France, 1011, expected Thames, 1008 by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, Viking, north Utsira, south Utsira, northeast 40s, southeasterly 5 or 6, showers, moderate or good, occasionally poor at first. Southwest 40s, Cromarty, 4th, Tyne, west Dogger, southeasterly 5 or 6, becoming variable 3 or 4, thundery rain, fog patches, moderate, occasionally very poor. East Dogger, Fisher, German Bight,